All right, we are back. One of the things Donald Trump has often been praised for is the fact that he did not get us involved in military conflicts. And, well, Mediasan has a few things to say about that and how untrue that notion is.
I keep meeting people in left-wing circles, in Muslim circles, in Arab-American circles, who tell me that they're voting for Donald Trump because he isn't a hawk. He didn't start any new wars. He killed fewer Muslims than Democratic presidents do. This argument is doing my head in because it just isn't true. It's total nonsense. So when it comes to Trump and war and killing Muslims in particular, it's time for a debunking. Number one, he didn't start any new wars, they say. Well, it's not like he didn't try. We just got lucky. In his first year in office, he picked a fight with nuclear-armed North Korea. He called Kim Jong-un Little Rocket Man, called him short and fat, and threatened him with fire and fury. Trump's own Homeland Security officials were so shit-scared that he'd start a major war with North Korea that they had multiple meetings to prepare for a nuclear attack, a North Korean nuclear strike on American soil. In his last year in office, Trump illegally assassinated Iran's top general, Qasem Soleimani, via a drone strike. And the only reason we didn't have a full-on war with Iran is because the Iranians chose to show restraint and not respond in kind. Had Iran, say, assassinated General Mark Milley, America's top general at that time, we would have been instantly in World War III as a result of Trump's actions. Let's be clear about that. In fact, Milley says Trump wanted to attack Iran after he lost the 2020 election. Trump also reportedly wanted to attack Venezuela. And now for his second term, he's considering airstrikes on Mexican soil. How's that for a new war? Not far away in the Middle East, but on our own southern border. By the way, this very specific and annoying claim that he was the first president to start no new war, that's just not true. Former president and Nobel Peace Laureate Jimmy Carter would like a word. And look, this whole not starting new wars thing is a distraction from the fact that Trump expanded and escalated pretty much every war that he inherited from Barack Obama. Remember, Obama famously didn't bomb the Assad government in Syria, but Trump did in 2017 and again in 2018. Obama didn't drop the single biggest bomb on Afghanistan, the mother of all bombs, the Moab. But Trump did. In fact, the number of Afghan civilians killed by airstrikes on Trump's watch went up 330%. And as writer Ben Krause points out, quote, there were more civilian deaths from airstrikes in Somalia under Trump than under Bush and Obama combined. Trump also oversaw a 200% increase in airstrike deaths in Iraq and Syria. Number two, well, at least he wasn't a drone president, they say, like Obama was. Look, Obama was indeed a drone president who killed a lot of innocent people with drone strikes. But you know who was a bigger drone president? Donald Trump. Yeah, you just haven't heard about it because much of our media is a joke and because both Muslims and the left, for some reason, have given Trump a pass on this issue. Here are the facts that you need to know. Donald Trump did more drone strikes in his first 2 years in office than Barack Obama carried out over 8 years in office. In fact, Trump didn't just do more drone strikes, he loosened all restrictions on drone strikes, making it even easier to kill innocent civilians. And it was Joe Biden, for all his sins on Gaza, who came along and almost ended the drone war without much fanfare and without much credit. Number three, well, at least Trump didn't do a genocide like Biden did in Gaza. Yes, he did. Yes, he did. In Yemen. How have we just forgotten the Yemen genocide with tens of thousands of deaths, thousands of kids killed, and a man-made famine? It started on Obama's watch, yes. But in 2018, it was President Trump who oversaw the Yemen war's deadliest and most violent year up until that point. It was Trump who was in charge when a US-made bomb was dropped on a school bus full of Yemeni kids. And it was Trump, like Biden with Israel, who bypassed Congress to get weapons and bombs to his pal MBS in Saudi Arabia, which were then used to kill even more innocent Yemenis en masse. So when you say Trump didn't do a genocide, didn't mass kill Muslims, you're erasing the people of Yemen, and you should really be ashamed of yourself. To be clear, Trump did try and start new wars. expanded old wars, increased drone strikes, and helped do a genocide in the Middle East. He also supported the invasion of Iraq, wanted America to steal Iraq's oil, and pardoned and praised American soldiers convicted of war crimes in Iraq. He's the president who ramped up the defense budget and surrounded himself with neocon hawks like Mike Pompeo, Mike Pence, Nikki Haley, and John Bloody Bolton. And he's the presidential candidate now who is surrounding himself again with hawks. China hawks, who would love nothing more than a new American war with the nuclear-armed People's Republic. So, Donald the Dove? No, that's ridiculous. It's perhaps the biggest, most annoying, and most demonstrable lie in American politics right now. Don't fall for it.
Anyway, let's now go to what Dave Pakman has to say about Donald Trump out on the campaign stump.
A slurring Trump may have set the record for the lowest energy rally of all time. He seems deflated. He seems like he's out of energy. He is certainly not potent in any way that we could assess the meaning of that word. And Donald Trump at this point, it's not clear if he's lying to himself or to the crowd, but he says, "I won that debate." And it's the moderators that should be fired.
And I remember NBC and that stupid ABC that did this horrible debate. Those two people should be fired as an anchor.
Fire.
A couple of more years, they'll be fired. And she was nasty. She looked at me with hatred in her eyes. And him, he's a nice guy. I mean, they were told to do it by George Slapodopoulos, who's in the group. Right.
Remember, any woman who asks Trump questions and wants answers is nasty. She was nasty, Lindsay Davis. Trump then going really substantive on debate moderator David Muir, saying his hair is not what it once was. Well, that's true of many of us, isn't it?
They kept screaming at me. I said, "Why are you screaming?" I'm saying to myself, I'm looking at him. I always liked him. I'm not going to watch him anymore. I'm not going to watch him because he's not legit what he did. I'm not going to watch him. And his hair's not as good as it used to be, you know?
And if this wasn't bad enough, then the slurring started as Trump went into the lurid anecdotes about rape and sodomy and murder. Trump just seeming like he's not all there. Very, very low energy, visibly so.
And illegal Haitians, and he came in, illegal Haitian migrants taking over a beautiful place. It was so beautiful. Springfield, Ohio. I was there. I campaigned there a while ago. Springfield, it was so beautiful. Now it's just, what a place. Can you imagine you have this small little community, all of a sudden you have 20,000 illegals in your community. Nobody knows where they come from. I'm angry about young American girls being raped and sodomized and murdered by savage criminal aliens.
How about that language, huh? Slurring his way through the lurid anecdotes, but how about that dehumanizing language, all of course based on what J.D. Vance now admits are created stories. Don't worry, we'll get to that a little bit later. And then finally, Trump dropping every single ad hominem he can think of against Kamala Harris.
We must defeat Comrade Kamala Harris. I use that term because you know what that term means, right? Communist. She's a Marxist, communist, fascist, socialist. She's not-
That's the best. That's where you're like, hey, you know, I don't think you know what any of those words mean. She's a Marxist, communist, fascist, socialist. Now, if you sat Trump down, as no interviewer has done to date, and I wish one of them would, and said, "Can you explain to me what is a fascist and what is a Marxist and what is a communist and what is a socialist? And please apply that to the policy prescriptions of Kamala Harris." I would love to see that done. Haven't seen it done yet. Don't know if any reporter will do it. If this is what Trump's campaign will be like for the next, 6 weeks or so, it doesn't seem like it's going to win him a single new voter.
We've noted on this program in the past that MSNBC seems to be head and shoulders above the other news networks in its coverage of campaign 2024. And a guy doing a great job in that department is Ari Melber. Let's hear from Ari.
This presidential campaign is in full swing. That first debate, over. Both sides say it was also the last debate. And that very big change is another way that we can tell you this year's campaign is quite different than most in the last several decades. Remember, typically there are three debates in the general election, which stoke several inflection points for voters across the fall. That's been true even in the Trump era, like 16. In past elections, the vast majority of voting on election day was the standard thing. You voted then. Nowadays, voting starts earlier and is easier to do in many states. They call it early voting. They call it vote by mail. And that's why it matters that tonight we're both 50 days out from that traditional election day. And the early voting starts. Do you know when it starts? This week, including in the states that might decide the whole enchilada, like Pennsylvania, which is taking votes by mail, and Wisconsin, Georgia, North Carolina. Now, if you're on a campaign and you think your side is up, early voting is a boost because you start locking in the current state of the race. Now, Donald Trump has previously attacked the early and mail-in voting. You might remember that. It was an approach that was harmful to him because of his own older voters who were more likely to use those tools, but then were told not to. He has since sort of softened or muddied that stance. And that is the voting part. And that's why this week matters, as some of the votes will start coming in. They won't be counted till later. As for the campaigning part, Donald Trump is out doing media and events. Today, he spoke with a Fox News writer earlier today. Tonight, he's launching a new business venture, and this is in the middle of the campaign, so make of it what you will, but they're talking up a new cryptocurrency business, and they're going to announce it on X. That's Elon Musk's platform. Now, the Times reports that the group here, World Liberty Financial, is somewhat unclear what it's supposed to accomplish. It would provide a kind of borrowing and lending service. It has its own token, the Times says, and Trump's family members have talked about or been involved with it recently. Trump also plans to do a town hall in Michigan with Sarah Huckabee Sanders, his former employee, and a rally in Long Island on Wednesday. So he's going to be out doing his thing this week. Harris is courting one of the biggest unions in the country, the Teamsters. With 1.3 million members, they can matter a lot and have not endorsed yet. And that, I talk about what's different, that's a contrast to decades past, when the top unions were reliably blue, and the Teamsters were run by a man you might remember, Jimmy Hoffa, recently immortalized by Al Pacino in the movie version, The Irishman. Well, fast forward to this year, and the current Teamsters chief hasn't picked a side, although the current union hasn't picked a side. The Teamsters chief, however, spoke at Trump's convention. His own members then seemed to sort of push back or evince their preference by showing up on stage at the DNC. As a president, Biden was more visibly pro-union than many other presidents, including Democrats in the past. Harris, for her part, has credited unions for America's labor breakthroughs, from the weekend you might have just finished to the concept of paid leave.
Everywhere I go, I tell people, look, you may not be a union member. You better thank a union member for the 5-day work week. You better thank a union member for sick leave. You better thank a union member for paid leave. You better thank a union member for vacation time. When unions are strong, America is strong.
Harris there, making the argument both to, as she put it, people who might not be a union, but invoking the strength and the policy victories of unions. It's a big deal in the Midwest, and her campaign is hitting the blue wall. She'll be in Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin this week. And the big O's are involved. Oprah Winfrey and Barack Obama are back out trying to help Harris in different ways her campaign wants, and they were memorable parts of the DNC.
It is up to all of us to fight for the America we believe in. And make no mistake, it will be a fight.
I'm calling on all you independents and all you undecideds.
America's ready for a new chapter. America's ready for a better story.
Let us choose common sense over nonsense.
We are ready for a President Kamala Harris.
Let's all choose Kamala Harris.
There you have it. Obama heading to an LA fundraiser, and the campaign says there'll be more events on the ground with him next month. Oprah doing one of these virtual events with Harris. So that's the two of them joining up in a virtual format. Again, something a little different this cycle than, say, 20 years ago in the Jimmy Hoffa era, 40 years ago. Oprah has been talking it up already online, where she has a huge audience. And I've told you this before. There's the general political civic audience following the news, thinking about voting, all that. And then there's the people who listen more to Taylor Swift and Oprah Winfrey than J.D. Vance. Can you blame them? So it matters that the campaign has Oprah talking up all of this as the birds chirp in the background.
And let's close out today's program with Brian Tyler Cohen. In the wake of the shellacking Donald Trump took in the debate with Kamala Harris, and in the absence of the aforementioned Republican establishment not being around to stop him, the MAGA crowd has been seeking excuses. But if there's anything that was 100% predictable about Donald Trump, is that when things go wrong, it's always somebody else's fault.
Cenk started off very rightly talking about how Republicans and Donald Trump seem unhinged by perpetuating these ideas that dogs and cats are being eaten and that women are having post-birth abortions. And the first thing that Michael does when he comes on here is perpetuate these exact claims. Look, you guys can do this
and
until you're blue in the face
with evidence.
I don't know how to convey the extent to which when Republicans say this kind of stuff, it does not resonate with normal people, and you seem crazy. And Donald Trump went out there on stage, got laughed at by the entire nation, and then, Michael, you come on here and you do the exact same thing. So please, triple down on this, quadruple down on this, make this election a referendum on this bogus notion that women are executing their babies after they're born. I beg of you, we'll see how that works out.
Okay.
Here's the thing. It would be one thing if Trump had a dismal debate and the right-wing ecosystem lamented it, nursed their bruised egos, and moved on. But because they traffic in the same pool of denialism as Trump, because they can never admit fault like Trump, because they are as deluded as Trump, what we are left with was not only a disastrous debate performance, but also proof that the rest of the right is just as bad as he is. I mean, honestly, the last thing that I would want to do if my candidate turned in a performance like Trump's is to align myself closer with him by repeating the same utter bullshit that he spewed on that debate stage. No matter how hard these right-wingers like Michael Knowles and Tommy Lahren try, no, you do not sound normal when you claim that migrants are eating pets. No, you don't sound normal when you claim that women are executing their babies after they're born. No, you don't sound normal when you brag about the world's dictators or can't offer anything beyond the concept of a plan, or, of course, lose your skull because someone spoke an ill word of the Holy Grail, your crowd size. It's bad enough that your candidate does it. The fact that the rest of these sycophants and mouthpieces voluntarily opt to do the same is a testament to the rot that has pervaded the entirety of the GOP. So look, I'm not here to tell Republicans to stop spewing this stuff. It's the opposite. I will gladly broadcast every time they do it. I will gladly help them spread the message that they want to spread, because while that stuff might appeal to the farthest fringes of their base, it really, really doesn't appeal to normal people. It makes them look creepy and unhinged and extreme. And if that's the message they want to send fewer than 2 months out from the election, far be it from me to stand in their way. Here's another moment from Piers's panel.
I think what's so interesting is that Tommy brought up this idea that the onus was on Kamala Harris to present some vision for the future. And if we think about this election, as far as Trump is concerned, is entirely predicated on seeking vengeance for what happened on January 6th. He wants to release the January 6th insurrectionists who've been prosecuted, who've been indicted and charged. He is solely focused on getting retribution for those people for what happened on January 6th. He was asked in this debate whether he would sign a nationwide abortion ban multiple times, refused to answer it. You want to talk about a vision for the future? He won't talk about what he's offering for the future. He's solely focused on relitigating events of the past. Ah, yes, the responsibility lies solely with Kamala Harris to offer a vision for the future, because that's what Republicans are concerned about, the future. The Make America Great Again party. All the while, their standard bearer is singing the J6 national anthem and promising to release the insurrectionists from prison and continuing to perpetuate the big lie that the 2020 election was stolen. But sure, these are the people for whom a forward-looking agenda is very high on the priority list. Got it. Consider, too, Kamala does talk about a vision for the future. She does talk about how she'll sign a bill codifying Roe into law when she's president. She does talk about how she'll sign the bill securing the border that Trump killed to preserve the border as a campaign issue into law when she's president. She does talk about how she'll create an opportunity economy by giving a $50,000 tax deduction for small businesses, how she'll enable young people to build wealth by offering first-time homebuyers a $25,000 grant for down payments on a home. You want to talk about plans? Her entire campaign is grounded in them. Meanwhile, Trump has been asked 12 separate times for his plan on childcare, and here's the word salad that he offered up.
If you win in November, can you commit to prioritizing legislation to make childcare affordable? And if so, what specific piece of legislation will you advance?
Well, I would do that, and we're sitting down. You know, I was somebody, we had Senator Marco Rubio, and my daughter Ivanka was so impactful on that issue. It's a very important issue. But I think when you talk about the kind of numbers that I'm talking about, that because, look, childcare is childcare. It couldn't, you know, there's something, you have to have it. In this country, you have to have it. But when you talk about those numbers compared to the kind of numbers that I'm talking about by taxing foreign nations at levels that they're not used to, but they'll get used to it very quickly. And it's not going to stop them from doing business with us, but they'll have a very substantial tax when they send product into our country. Those numbers are so much bigger than any numbers that we're talking about, including childcare, that it's going to take care. We're going to have, I look forward to having no deficits within a fairly short period of time, coupled with the reductions that I told you about on waste and fraud and all of the other things that are going on in our country, because I have to stay with childcare. I want to stay with childcare, but those numbers are small relative to the kind of economic numbers that I'm talking about, including growth, but growth also headed up by what the plan is that I just told you about. We're going to be taking in trillions of dollars, and as much as childcare is talked about as being expensive, it's relatively speaking not very expensive compared to the kind of numbers we'll be taking in. We're going to make this into an incredible country that can afford to take care of its people, and then we'll worry about the rest of the world. Let's help other people. But we're going to take care of our country first. This is about America first. It's about make America great again. We have to do it because right now we're a failing nation. So we'll take care of it. Thank you. Very good question. Thank you.
If anyone could tell me what those words mean, I'm all ears. But until then, perhaps the Republicans should spare us the grandstanding about how important it is that their candidates present a clear and convincing vision for the future when their candidate is Donald Trump. Here's one last moment from Piers. You know, I've sat here listening to Dan, to Michael, I believe Tommy made the same point about how Donald Trump has to fire his advisors when he comes back for the second debate. He can't listen to these people who've steered him wrong. Does anybody actually think that Donald Trump took the advice of any of his advisors? Does he think that he's disciplined enough to take any advice and not just revert back to exactly who he is, exactly the guy that we've seen for the past nearly a decade? The second he's poked, he is so easy to bait that you could dangle a cookie in front of a four-year-old and they would have more discipline than Donald Trump. This notion that his advisors are responsible for what happened on that debate stage is a joke. It's also, you know, you look at someone like Ronna McDaniel, for example. She was fired as RNC chair because Donald Trump always needs to blame somebody for his own shortcomings. The reason that Republicans lost was not because of Ronna McDaniel or the RNC. It's because people aligned with Donald Trump, aligned with the America First agenda, didn't present themselves well to the American people because they're lunatics and they lost. But Donald Trump can't take responsibility for anything. And so somebody else had to get thrown under the bus as the result of that. What we saw on that debate stage was not the fault of his advisors, was not the fault of anybody on his team, was not the fault of anybody but Donald Trump. He cannot take responsibility, which makes it especially ironic that he's running to represent the party of personal responsibility.
Here's the thing.
it can never be Trump's fault. If we've learned anything over the last 8 or 9 years, it's that everyone else is to blame and Donald Trump is perfect. And so now, rather than simply acknowledge objective reality and recognize that Trump lost the debate because he is incompetent and impulsive, the new talking point is that he was poorly prepared and ill-served by his advisors. As if Donald Trump would ever actually listen to the counsel of an advisor and not simply descend into exactly the kind of meltdown that is as predictable as the sun rising in the morning. The notion that someone else is to blame for Trump's behavior is a joke. But of course, because the right-wing media ecosystem is designed to prop up Donald Trump, no matter what he does or says, he'll always have these clowns out here making excuses for his idiocy. Republicans love clutching their pearls about affirmative action. This is the ultimate form of it. Trump can fail and fail and fail, but they'll always make excuses for him. They'll always save him. Not because he deserves it, not because the right is some type of meritocracy, but because they've decided to create a little safety net for their man-child of a candidate. So look, while this panel on Piers Morgan was absurd, it's not a one-off. This is a perfect microcosm for the right-wing media ecosystem. Not only do they defend an abject moron, but remember, no one is forcing them to do this. They've made the conscious decision, the voluntary decision, to show up on air and defend a guy who took to national TV in front of 60 million people and did this.
In Springfield, they're eating the dogs, the people that came in. They're eating the cats. They're eating the pets of the people that live there. And this is what's happening in our country, and it's a shame.
So if Michael Knowles and Tommy Lahren and Piers Morgan want to twist themselves into pretzels to defend that guy, by all means, I won't do anything to stand in their way.
That about does it for today's program. On next week's show, I think we're going to devote some time as to what you can do, dear listener, in a practical sense, to reach out and make a difference in the election. We think that most of you are California residents, and it is a given that California is going to vote for Kamala Harris. But who do you know in Nevada, or Wisconsin, or Pennsylvania, or Michigan, or North Carolina, or Arizona, or Georgia? This election could hinge on our neighboring state of Nevada. If you've got friends there likely to vote blue, well, remind them to make sure they're registered to vote. And if they're in that bizarre category of voters known as the undecided, well, dear listener, please work on them a little. Help them to reach a decision. It shouldn't be that hard when the choice is a floridly crazy person and someone who's not floridly crazy, but hey, some people just have a hard time making their mind up. Despite a little bit of a mix-up, the good people at KDVS have slated us for the fall quarter. We're grateful. And our thanks yet again to Guy for helping facilitate matters to, well, just keep the gears oiled. This program was produced by Edward McMillan. You've been listening to Radio Parallax. I'm your faithful host, Douglas Everett, and we'll talk to you again next week.
In Springfield, they're eating the dogs, the people that came in. They're eating the cats. They're eating the pets of the people that live
there. It's the last dog in Springfield to be eaten by a Haitian. You can see them at the corner lined up in anticipation. Hide your pets or you'll regret. You'll have regrets. 'Cause I heard it from old Donnie mentioned at his big debate. He got fact-checked, but he countered. It had been on television. Ain't that great? Oh, ain't that great? You can't negate such a presidential way to substantiate. It's the last cat in Springfield to be eaten by a Haitian. That's the story used for demonizing brown-skinned immigration on the right. Let's keep it white. We'll keep it white.